Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Like so many issues, Donald Trump's education policy details have been thin, but his nomination of Betsy DeVos for Secretary of Education shows us that voucher programs will be a priority. Betsy DeVos comes from a wealthy family and married into one. Her husband, Richard DeVos, is heir to the billion-dollar Amway fortune. They live in Michigan. According to Mother Jones, the DeVoses sit alongside the Kochs and the Corses as founding families of the modern conservative movement. Since 1970, the DeVos family has spent at least $200 million on right-wing think tanks, media outlets, evangelical groups, and political committees. Millions of dollars have been spent on advocating for vouchers to allocate taxpayer dollars to private and religious schools. In 2001, Betsy DeVos told a group of conservative Christian philanthropists that education reform is a way to advance God's kingdom. She and her husband believe school choice will lead to greater kingdom gain. That's according to Catherine Stewart, author of The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children. In Michigan, where Betsy DeVos is regarded for overhauling public education, national reading and math rankings have fallen as charter schools have expanded. Betsy DeVos and her husband have donated to the 17 senators who will consider her nomination to be the Secretary of Education, according to Politico. So what changes will Betsy DeVos and the Trump administration make to the country's education system? What's really at stake here? Joining me today to talk about the future of public education under Betsy DeVos are two guests. Carol Burris is Executive Director of the Network for Public Education. That's a national organization whose mission is to improve and strengthen public schools. Prior to that, Carol was an award-winning high school principal in New York. She is the author of three books on educational equity, and she recently sent an email to members of the Network for Public Education with a list of ways they can express their opposition to the nomination of Betsy DeVos to be Secretary of Education. And Carol Burris joins us from the Argo Studios in New York. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Kate Nickel, Executive Director of Oakland Families for Quality Schools. That's a nonprofit created by local charter public school advocates. Kate leads the Vincent Academy, a charter public elementary school in West Oakland. She's been an elementary school principal in Oakland and has taught in Philadelphia and San Leandro. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, it's great to have you. It's great to have both of you. Carol, I want to start off with you. Before we dive in and talk about Betsy DeVos, let's talk about what we know about Donald Trump's education policy. Like so many issues, we don't really know much, but the Washington Post has a piece about his trip to an Ohio charter school back in September, where he pitched a $20 billion education plan there. Tell us what you know about this so far. It's basically a $20 billion plan that would create state-run block grants.
Right. I mean, I think what we know about Donald Trump is that, like Betsy DeVos, what he believes is an unregulated schooling system. Both he and his son have referred to our public schools that are run by democratically elected school boards as government schools that are akin to the former department stores of the Soviet Union. So Donald Trump, at least what we know, is proposing that we would take a lot of the federal funds that go into the states to help kids with disabilities, to help students that are struggling with reading, students who are poor, and then turn them over to block grants that would promote charter schools, vouchers, online schooling, and a host of different alternatives to the public school system, which he frankly does not believe in.
Because funding is at issue here, for people who are not familiar with how the public education system is funded, can you just give us a brief overview?
Well, every state is a little bit different. There are some monies that come from the federal government. Then a lot of states will then raise money through local tax dollars. There might be some state dollars. Some states like New York, for example, it's mostly through property tax. Other states like Vermont, all of the property tax goes into a state fund that's redistributed. So it's really, funding is a mixture of federal, state, and local dollars, and probably the smallest proportion are federal dollars.
And Kate, what would you add? What are your thoughts on the little we know about Donald Trump's education policy?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in broad agreement with what Carol's bringing up right now. We don't know a lot, and I think that he definitely has signaled that he really believes in marketplace dynamics to resolve, you know, issues. I think that I see the charter sector as definitely part of the public school system. I think at this point in time, what I would like to see happen is that we are doubling down on the public school system, and I don't see from what Trump is saying right now that that is the direction that he's headed in. I think a lot of the what he's sort of leading us into sounds very dangerous and not the direction that we want to head in. That being said, I think that it's really important to see the charter sector as part of the public education system, and I think that there's a lot that can be addressed through supporting that sector, supporting that as a viable solution for families who are looking for who need an excellent choice. And I think if we could go that route, we could avoid heading into territory where we're talking about vouchers or really truly privatizing the public education system, which is something I don't want to see happen.
What do you mean when you say we should be doubling down on the public school system?
What I mean is that I think that, you know, going into territory where we are looking at vouchers, I do see that as dismantling the public education system. I think that is absolutely the wrong way to go. But sometimes as a person who's worked both in the district system and in the charter system, the narrative, the debate between the charter and the district traditional schooling systems feels like a false debate to me. I'm a person who, in my background, you know, I've worked in the public school system. I'm absolutely for, you know, all students having an excellent quality education, no matter what their background is. And I think that we need to find ways to get to that reality quickly. And I see charter schools as part of that solution.
Let's talk about Betsy DeVos and what we know about her background. She, unlike so many other appointees, actually has a very long record in education. She comes from a wealthy family. She married into the Amway family. Her husband, Richard DeVos, is heir to the billion-dollar Amway fortune. And they live in Michigan. So many reports have said that Betsy DeVos has had her hands in so many pieces of legislation in Michigan. She's widely credited with reshaping Michigan's public school system, where national reading and math rankings have fallen as charter schools have expanded. A Washington Post headline is "Trump picks billionaire Betsy DeVos school voucher advocate as education secretary." Carol, when it comes to vouchers, what do we need to know about Betsy DeVos and her record?
Well, I'd like to back up a little bit and push back on something that Kate said. At the Network for Public Education, we don't believe that charter schools are public schools. And the damage that Betsy DeVos did in Michigan so far has not been through vouchers. Even though she attempted to have vouchers passed and spent $5.6 million to do it, it was defeated. What's happened in Michigan has occurred because of the expansion of charter schools. Unregulated charter schools. She fights continually against any kind of regulations on the system to reform them, to push back. And they've become, over time, 80% of them have become for-profit charter schools. MPE recently did a report on charter schools in California. Frankly, I was appalled by what I saw when I went to the state. So, you know, when we talk about Betsy DeVos, I think we make a mistake if we only look at what she wants with vouchers, which in state after state, especially in Ohio, there's another report in New Orleans that have shown that they're not working, that voucher system scores go down. Indiana, the state of Indiana is now in educational debt because of voucher schools. But what she is proposing and what Trump is proposing is a lot bigger than just a voucher program. And it has been a long road over the past 20 years of attempts to privatize our public school system.
What about that, Kate?
Well, I want to just go back to something Carol just said. I want to put in context my idea that charter schools really are part of the public school system. I think that comes with accountability. And in California, you know, the California Charter Schools Association has taken the position that schools that are underperforming should be closed. As an educator, I agree with that. I think that we will strengthen the public school sector if we have quality schools, whether they're traditional district schools or they're charter schools. I don't think anybody should be outside of accountability standards. So I think that that's an important piece. I don't think that anybody should be supporting schools that don't have transparency and accountability surrounding them. That's what we owe our families and our students.
Carol?
Well, I agree with that, but the problem is the California Charter Schools Association blocks bill after bill that tries to achieve a lot of that transparency. I mean, this is something Kate knows. She, I believe, worked for the California Charter School Association. I saw in California charter schools and shopping malls where kids only have to show up 2 hours a week. I mean, I think that's outrageous. And this were children who were as young as in seventh grade. Look, charter schools...
2 hours a week?
2 hours a week.
Can you elaborate?
And they're in shopping malls all over the state. Look at the Learn for Life chain. Look at the Altus chain in San Diego. And when the state tries to put in, or when there's been attempts to put in regulations, they've been fought, and they've been fought by the Charter School Association. You have districts that are making money by opening these storefront charters up in other districts, in other counties, getting some funding for it. There was a bill to slow that down and to stop it and put some regulation on it. California Charter Schools Association fought that bill. Online learning is an absolute disaster. You have graduation rates with online charter schools. The average in the nation is 40%.
Carol, I found that some of... referring to independent study schools that are home schools. That's not the vast majority of the charter schools in California. And I also just want to pick up on the piece around profit. I absolutely 100% believe that there should be no profit making in the field of education. I think that actually takes us away from the public good. And, you know, in California, less than 1% of the charters are for-profit. I'd be very happy if none of them were for-profit, frankly.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about California, because the Washington Post reports that California has more charter schools and more charter school students than any other state in the nation. And charter supporter Governor Jerry Brown, who started two charter schools when he was the mayor of Oakland, recently vetoed legislation that would have brought more oversight to the charter industry in California. Why the resistance?
To the oversight?
Well, yes, Kate.
I think the devil's in the details. I actually don't think there is resistance to oversight. I think actually if you look at what's being said, both publicly through, you know, the statewide agency of the California Charter Schools Association, but also on the leader front, I can speak to the Oakland context and the leaders that I work with. These are all people who very much appreciate that schools need to be they're for the public good. They need to be regulated, and they need to have proper oversight. I think that what that oversight looks like and what proper oversight actually is debatable, and it's a good debate, and we should have that. However, I think that because there's so much blanket opposition to charter schools, because people take such a hard line, and the conversation, the rhetoric is very monolithic. Everybody's putting all charter schools together. I think sometimes what comes down the pike is just it's not very refined. And I think to the extent that we are actually working together, that we are on the same side, and we are looking at how we can better improve the system overall and where charters fit into that, there's less resistance. I think where the resistance is to simply being treated as a monolithic entity that is in need of scaling back, where that may not actually be true.
What about that, Carol?
Well, in terms of the independent learning centers, that is not homeschooling. Homeschooling is included in it, but it is far broader than that, and it's 20% of all of the charter schools in the state of California. So it is a problem. It's a big problem. And while, you know, I agree with what Kate says in terms of regulation, but it leaves me scratching my head because every time such regulation is put forward, what happens is the California Charter School Association and other, and the members are, of course, charter schools, they fight those regulations. I mean, we need to have transparency, we need to have openness, we need to have oversight, and we need to stop draining funds from public schools in the state of California.
Well, I take issue with that, again, because I think that that statement right there, Carol, is, you know, part of the problem. We see ourselves as part of the public school system. We see ourselves as part of the solution. We see ourselves, especially for families who do not have adequate choice in their neighborhoods, as a very important component to the public school system. And I think to the extent that we work together and have a common goal of making sure that every single student has a quality option as quickly as possible with urgency, the sooner we'll get out of this potential conflict that we're now facing together, which is that we are looking at a nominee for Secretary of Education who potentially is moving in the direction of vouchers, which I really think is the wrong direction.
And Kate, you point out that there's a complexity around charter schools. The laws governing charter schools vary from state to state.
They do.
So how much influence would Betsy DeVos have on charter schools?
That's hard to say. I mean, I think that in general, I'm appreciative that she is open to the idea of charter schools. I think that that's an important place for her to come from. However, what that means, I think we need definitions. What are we actually talking about there? Because I think, as I said, from state to state, it's a different kind of legislative atmosphere that has led to charter schools, and what they are in that particular state is different from state to state. So we're not necessarily comparing apples to apples.
What are your thoughts on that, Carol?
Yeah, I mean, I think that where she probably is outside of where many in the charter community are is in her strong belief in for-profit charter schools as part of the choice system. But, you know, the problem is even in a state like California, where charters are given to nonprofit entities, what's happened is that you have a lot of for-profit companies that are behind and that become the charter management organization, so that you have the STEAM academies, which are online, which are essentially just fronts for K-12 in Virginia. So, you know, it's a very, very complicated situation. And whether or not she would force more for-profit charter schools on the state of California, I mean, I don't think things like that would happen. My biggest worry is that race to the top is going to be replaced by a race to the bank, where what you're going to see is a lot of incentives to open up more choice alternatives without any kind of worries about quality and with fewer regulations. And if states are given grants in order to do that, that'll be very dangerous.
Speaking of money, the New York Times had a piece about this. While the idea was to foster academic competition, the unchecked growth of charters has created a glut of schools competing for some of the nation's poorest students, enticing them to enroll with cash bonuses, laptops, raffle tickets for iPads. Leaders of charter and traditional schools say they're being cannibalized, fighting so hard over students and the limited public dollars that follow them that no one thrives. The piece goes on to say Detroit now has a bigger share of students in charters than any American city except New Orleans. Half the charters perform only as well or worse than Detroit's public schools. Carol, what about that?
Yeah, I mean, that is a real danger. In fact, what you have happening in California right now in the Anaheim school district, both the high school and elementary school district are fighting it, is a charter school called EPIC that is doing just that. It's giving flyers out saying that parents will receive money to buy educational dollars. I called them up. They had no problem with kids using that money for cameras and other devices, giving laptops. And it happens to be a company that's under investigation in the state of Oklahoma. And this is happening, you know, right in your own state. And what happens then is it really does become almost a predatory practice where parents who are poor, who are trying to make ends meet, who, you know, take a look at a flyer like that and it's promising this wonderful education that it never delivers. And it really is, you know, it starts to create chaos. And I'm very, very worried, especially in the state of California where my own grandson lives, that in about 10 years or 20 years, you're going to see a large number of students who are truly undereducated because of the proliferation of a lot of these learning center charter schools, online charter schools, and the lack of regulation.
Hmm. Kate, are you concerned about that?
Well, I want to point us to Oakland, where we have, you know, quite a high proportion of charter schools. We're about 30% of the students in Oakland are in public charter schools. And, you know, here in Oakland, what I see happening is that we've reached a critical mass, I would say, of charter schools. We have 42 charter schools. And at this point, what's happening is that the charter sector here has matured to an extent that the leaders of this charter sector have come together and started to self-organize in a way that is really supporting all families across the city. We're taking responsibility for the experience of all students and families, not just the students who are coming to our schools. And so an example of the kind of work that's happening is that, you know, this year the charter leaders came together and said, you know, it's creating a difficulty for families in terms of enrolling in schools. They're having a hard time figuring out where they would like to go, what all the options are. It's, you know, potentially a very challenging, you know, to get around to 42 different schools just isn't practical. And so the leaders came together and created a common application, common timeline that families are now able to utilize this year. And so far, you know, the response of families has been, this is fantastic, this is really what we need. Perhaps down the line, that enrollment system that will be underneath the charter sector will be able to merge with the district sector. Again, I don't think any of the leaders that I know in the charter sector in Oakland, we are really invested in finding ways that we can work together to support all families and all students in having the very best educational experience that they can have. And we are really invested in working with all the educators in the city. Many of us used to work for the district and don't see ourselves as separate from that system. We just see ourselves as an offshoot that can potentially bring needed resources where they're needed most.
What about oversight, Kate? According to the Alameda County Grand Jury, the charter schools in Oakland have a far greater share of public school students at 24% versus 6% for the national average. In August, they released their annual report stating that they believe charter schools within the Oakland Unified School District require more rigorous oversight and a more collaborative relationship with districts in order to better serve the interest of all of Oakland's students. What kind of oversight do you think is needed?
I don't disagree with that. I think that to the extent that, you know, there's excellent oversight, that's really important. I think that most of the charter leaders in Oakland have a positive relationship with the authorizer. Many years ago, Oakland really redid their entire authorizing office, and to great effect. They did a good job on that, and I think there isn't a resistance to excellent authorizing. I think where it becomes tricky is when authorizers are stepping into arenas that are not really part of the work that they're supposed to be doing. And so I don't find that to be particularly true in Oakland. I think Oakland has done a good job in the authorizing front.
And one more question on charters, and then we're going to move on after the break. We actually already have full lines. So many people have questions about all of this. Bethany writes, I'm a special education teacher in Oakland. According to a recent ACLU report, 253 California charter schools illegally restrict enrollment, often engaging in exclusion based on academic performance. Several Oakland schools were found to be in violation, including American Indian Public Charter School, which by its own admission enrolls very few students with disabilities. For many families, school choice is about avoiding students like mine, students with learning and behavior challenges. She says charter schools do not serve our most needy students who have moderate to severe disabilities. This is a two-tier system. Can you respond to this?
I'd love to respond to that, actually. I think it's incumbent upon charter schools to serve all students, and that includes students with disabilities. I think there are some complexities to the special education situation your average person isn't aware of. And I won't go into too much detail, but just to say that there are some structural challenges within the special arena. And one of the things that happens is that depending on where you, what SELPA you are part of as a charter school, who makes the final call about which students are allowed to attend your school is different. So if you are part of the OUSD SELPA, which, at, you know, many years ago, most of the charter schools were part of the OUSD SELPA, it was actually, at the end of the day, the district that was deciding where those students should attend. And so sometimes students were not allowed to attend charter schools. Over the past, say, 10 years, most of the charter schools in Oakland have moved into the El Dorado Charter SELPA. And so that now allows charter schools to serve all students. The students who are the schools that are part of the El Dorado SELPA are able to serve all students. And so there's an attempt right now for charter schools to really, you know, make good on that. I think one of the challenges, though, is that until a student arrives on your doorstep and has a particular need, the charter school is not necessarily set up to serve that child's need. So there's a lag. And that's what we're working on right now to figure out how to do a better job along those lines.
Kate Nickel is Executive Director of Oakland Families for Quality Schools, a nonprofit created by local charter public school advocates. Carol Burris is Executive Director of the Network for Public Education, a national organization whose mission is to improve and strengthen public schools, and she opposes the nomination of Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education. This is Your Call, and after a break, we'll take your phone calls and emails.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, you may call us. However, our lines are full. When someone goes away, you can try and call us at 866-798-8255. Toll free, 866-798-8255. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We like to hear from new voices. You can also write to us rather than call. You can email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at our website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up in a half an hour at 11 o'clock, it's the BBC's World Have Your Say. The conversation will be about the attacks in Berlin and Ankara yesterday. That'll be in a half an hour from now.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be joined by Becky Bond, senior advisor to the Bernie Sanders campaign and co-author of Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. How will this movement organize against Donald Trump? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about Betsy DeVos, Donald Trump's pick to head the Education Department. Since the 90s, Betsy DeVos and her husband have contributed $7 million to Michigan lawmakers and have influenced nearly every major piece of education legislation there. That's where they live. She's widely credited with reshaping the state's public school system, where national reading and math rankings have fallen as charter schools have expanded. Later in the show, we'll also talk about her religious leanings. In 2001, she said education reform is a way to, quote, advance God's kingdom. So, what else do we need to know about Betsy DeVos? We haven't given out the phone number yet, but the lines are full, so clearly people really care about this issue and public education. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by Carol Burris, Executive Director of the Network for Public Education, an organization whose mission is to improve and strengthen public schools. She opposes the nomination of Betsy DeVos. Carol was an award-winning high school principal in New York and is the author of three books on educational equity. Kate Nichols is executive director of Oakland Families for Quality Schools, a nonprofit created by local charter public school advocates. She also leads the Vincent Academy, a charter public elementary school in West Oakland. Let's go through a few phone calls, and then we'll get our responses from our guests. Let's go to Mark in Woodacre. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Enjoying listening to you guys. I'm a public school advocate. I've been an educator for 50 years, taught high school, trained teachers, been on a school board, et cetera. And I'm now an educational columnist, and I just wrote one. The nomination of Betsy DeVos, Foolish and Dangerous. So that'll give you the frame. It's going to be in the Marin Independent Journal. It'll probably be in Edutopia as well. I'll try to keep my comments really brief. One, she does not have the expertise or experience needed. It's narrow experience in one area, and she demonstrated there, and this is a point being made about charter schools, that she does not look at charter schools and in terms of their total complexity. I totally agree with the statement that being for or against charter schools is plain stupid. Being for good charter schools and opposed to bad charter schools makes total sense. I've been in great ones, highly integrated, ones working with kids at risk. I've been in others that are sheer disasters. So you can't look at charter schools as a single entity any more than you look at public schools in general, which they are part of, as a single entity. My greatest fear has to do with her advocating vouchers. The dangers of vouchers have been well documented. There's been no evidence of improved student achievement where they've been tried. Instead, a two-tiered system has been created in which the strongest schools have gotten stronger, the weakest have deteriorated further. They're a bad idea socially. They encourage segregation and stratification. There's no evidence that they help low-income children and families.
Thank you for calling. Sorry to cut you off, but we have so many callers. So your concern is with vouchers, and we will talk specifically about vouchers in just a couple minutes. But because so many people have called in, I just want to get in a few more calls. Let's go to Mark in San Diego. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Yes, this is Mark Freeman. I'm an educator at UCSD, but I'm very involved in our local San Diego school district. I am a lecturer that teaches German, but my major concern, and I also volunteer in a charter school for K through 5, where we teach small kids German in an immersion. The school is absolutely incredible. UCSD has one of the foremost charter schools in the country, the Preuss School. My concern is public money for private schools. What will Betsy DeVos do with that?
Hmm. All right, thank you. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I think we should definitely look at the results of what this privatization effort has done in other countries. For example, this model has already been done in Chile, and it was very disastrous. It created a very severe educational crisis along the entire country, which people have still not been able to recover from in terms of really low academic results in this privatization of education via voucher systems and also via unregulated charter school implementation in Chile. I live in San Francisco, and I remember 20 years ago, there was a privatization or charter school created here at Edison, and they were cherry picking their students, and that only creates more difficulties for the teachers that are left in their public schools with higher percentages of children that have more needs. and then it just becomes a self-fulfilling cycle of and also I particularly do not support charter schools that don't support unionization of the teachers, because if you have good teachers that are well paid, you have more permanent teachers and happier teachers and in fact better teachers. So
all right. Well, thank you, Lisa, for calling in. Let's tackle Mark's first question. He's very concerned about vouchers. And Carol, do you want to take that one? The Washington Post reports that Betsy DeVos has spent millions of dollars pushing for voucher programs that would give families taxpayer dollars to pay for private and religious schools. And Betsy DeVos is poised to spread her preference for vouchers nationwide.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I mean, we do know, and the caller spoke about it a little bit, the vouchers don't work. For example, there was a study done by the Fordham Institute in 2016 of vouchers in Ohio. Fordham's a pretty conservative think tank. And they found that the students who were the voucher students underperformed the students that were in traditional, I don't particularly like that term, I like to use the term neighborhood, public school students. And even in New Orleans, which is the hotbed of school choice, an Education Research Alliance study found that voucher students' test scores have slipped below traditional public school counterparts between 8 to 16 percentile points. There's no real evidence that it works. And in a lot of the states, for example, in Indiana, what winds up happening is money goes to people who would have been sending their kids to private school anyway. And all of a sudden, the state finds itself in debt. The caller who talked about Chile is absolutely right. I mean, they have a really serious problem from privatization under Pinochet. You have a four-tier system. You have municipal schools. You have charter-like schools. You have voucher privates and then an elite system of private schools. And what you find, and this is what happens in a lot of choice systems, that over time, the kids that are left in what they call municipal schools, which would be our traditional neighborhood public schools governed by school boards, that the weakest students are the ones that are left behind, the students who come from homes of severe poverty. Those are the ones who are in the schools in Chile. You saw the same thing in Sweden, which has a privatized system, where you started to see a divergence, and there's not even the ethnic diversity that we have in this country, but there is some SES diversity. Whereas you have a system like Finland, which is a true public school system that is based on equity, you see kids thriving, you see their scores going up. Sweden is one of the few nations that have had their PISA scores drop consistently since the year 2000. So we know that these voucher systems do not, they do a great, if you want to segregate society, if you want to keep your kid away from those kids that you don't think are as good as your child, well, a choice system is exactly what you want. And it's really very tragic because, as they're finding in Chile, it's like Humpty Dumpty. Once you break your public school system, it becomes impossible to put it back together again.
Kate, you are also concerned about vouchers.
Absolutely. I actually agree with everything that Carol just said. I really don't believe that is the path we want to go down. I think the piece that I'm adding, though, is to back up a step and say, look at what we do have as part of the public education system. And I am defining charter schools as part of the public education system. The charter system, especially in California, is offering a potential path, a pathway to get to quality quickly. And I think the sooner we put our minds together around how we do that, how we utilize these two arms of the public education system to get to quality quickly, the less reason there is to even think about the possibility of vouchers. I don't want to go in that direction, but we're leaving ourselves open to that by engaging in a battle between charter and district. It's a false battle. And the people who are in California, in Oakland, the folks who are actually working in the charter sector are here and ready to help. That's what we're doing. It's to be constantly battling a narrative that you're part of, you know, a corporate takeover is just pointless, and it takes up a lot of energy. And I really put this out to you, Carol, that, you know, to the extent that we are working together to solve the real problem, which is that we don't have a quality system for all students, the sooner we get to that reality, the less likely it is that forces of privatization are actually going to come in and deal us a blow that we can't recover from.
Carol?
No, what I would say is that that process has already started, and it started with the proliferation of charter schools. Look, certainly I think it's a wonderful idea for the charter sector to work against the nomination of Betsy DeVos. And for those of us who believe in a vibrant public school system where you take all of your wonderful energy, Kate, and you bring it into making that system better, I think, you know, well, that's terrific, too. I think it's we may disagree on charter schools, but the idea of lots of different groups for a variety of reasons opposing the nomination of Betsy DeVos is terrific.
We can oppose the nomination of Betsy DeVos, that's fine, but the actual work that it's going to take to fix the system is going to require that educators from both the charter sector and the district sector are working in close collaboration. That's what we're trying to get to in Oakland right now. We're really working on that front, and I have high hopes that, you know, in Oakland we're going to see something that's unprecedented, something that's new, where we will actually get to a solution in our public education system that really utilizes the best of the charter sector and the best of the district sector and brings it together. And I'd like, if that happens, I think that should be a model for how we move forward in the, you know, the entire country.
I also wanted you to respond to Mark's question. He's concerned that public money will be spent on private schools. Can you address that one first, Carol?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we all should be very concerned about that. And you know, we believe, or I think we believe as a nation, in the separation of church and state. And when all of a sudden public money starts shifting in those directions, especially in an unregulated environment, it can be very, very problematic. I mean, there are already issues that you see in the state of California with Escondido Charter High School having been accused of prayer at graduation. You know, there are questions about Gulen Charter Schools and what kind of a connection it has to the Gulen movement. So, you know, we have to really think long and hard about whether we really do believe in the separation of church and state, and then make sure that we don't have public monies supporting religion. I think that it's wonderful that there are schools that are private schools with a religious orientation. My goodness, I went to parochial schools for 12 years, and I got a good education, chose to send our own children to public schools. But there needs to be a separation when it comes to public dollars. And I think from a lot of the statements that Betsy DeVos has made, we know that that's not something that she believes in.
Carol Burris is Executive Director of the Network for Public Education, a national organization with a mission to improve and strengthen public schools. She is opposing the nomination of Betsy DeVos. We're also joined by Kate Nickel, Executive Director of Oakland Families for Quality Schools, a nonprofit created by local charter public school advocates. And quick question for you, Kate, from Steve. I'm a former Oakland principal. I've seen innovative charters and disasters like the American Indian Charter. DeVos and her cronies are clear on destroying what they call, quote, government schools. Even charter advocates have to denounce what DeVos plans to do. Will they? Do you know, Kate, if you founded this, this is a nonprofit that you're running that's created by local charter public school advocates. Where do they stand on the nomination of Betsy DeVos?
I don't know across the board where everybody stands personally on this, but I would say in general, definitely there is a desire to see the public education system thrive. That's what we are about. And I think we see ourselves as part of the public education system, that is charter schools. I think we would vigorously oppose any idea that would be heading in the direction of dismantling the public education system. And I would include in that vouchers, frankly, for-profit charter institutions. I don't believe in that either. So I don't know exactly how to answer that question, but to say that in general, yes, I think that those who are truly invested in the public education system, and I know all of the charter leaders in Oakland to be that way, I think that, you know, there's no tolerance for anything that's going to dismantle this system.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Steve. Let's go next to Julie Vassilatos, calling in from Chicago. She runs a blog called Chicago Public Fools. She's very concerned about Betsy DeVos. She wrote a piece called Betsy DeVos and the End of Public Education. Hi, Julie. Thanks for calling in.
Hi.
We've been talking a lot about charter schools and vouchers. What else concerns you about Betsy DeVos?
Well, I would say that in Chicago, we would be very concerned about her as the Secretary of Education. Our experience with privatization here in Chicago has been universally terrible. We run at an enormous deficit because of the priorities that the mayor has that are not necessarily good for the schools, but they're good for donors and businesses that he is affiliated with. And we definitely would see an expansion of charterization here. I was interested to hear your guest, Kate, speak about charters being hand-in-hand with the public schools, but this is not the case here in Chicago. We were subject to a closure of 50 neighborhood schools, and for the reasons of we don't have enough money, this is what we were told, or we have too many schools, too many seats. And then in the intervening years, it's been 3 years since 50 schools were closed, and the school board, which is appointed, not elected, has approved dozens of charters to open. Now, the other problem with increase in charters is a decrease in union teaching staff. Mm. And even the president of the University of Chicago Lab School says that he would dread to see what sort of staff would result from zero unionization, as Carol spoke earlier, that well-paid teachers are, you know, well-compensated teachers, they're good teachers. They're going to do the best for children. Hmm.
And we had a caller about that, actually, concerned that charters do not support the unionization of teachers. And, Julie, what about things like No Child Left Behind and Common Core? These are very well-known federal initiatives in education. Where are they after 8 years of Obama? And what's in store for them under Trump?
Well, I would say that the Obama Department of Education definitely paved the way for what seems to be now we're poised to see the full ascendancy of privatization in this country with our public schools. They spent a ton of money on initiatives and used a lot of private public partnerships, which is a part of, you know, getting the private money in there is a piece of increasing privatization. No Child Left Behind, again, not an Obama initiative, but that was a total failure. What happened was the priority was test scores. And we know now that high-stakes standardized testing proves and demonstrates one statistic, which is who lives in poverty. That's about all that you can derive from standardized testing. So it doesn't show which schools are good, which schools deserve more investment, which schools deserve to be closed. The most vulnerable schools are the schools that need the most investment. This is the opposite of what we get in Chicago.
Hmm.
And what was the other thing you said? Not Race to the Top, but
Common Core.
Oh, Common Core. Yeah, that The biggest problem with that right now, I think the rollout was a botched disaster, but the biggest problem is the testing that's associated with it. In Chicago, we get many of our grades have as many as 25 standardized tests per year. So we are, our kids are subject to a constant churn of, you know, showing the return on investment of the testing. Mm-hmm. And it's, as you might imagine, it's not educating. It's failing these children, and it's very expensive. So the Common Core, I can't even hardly speak to what it is, but I can tell you that the testing that's associated with it has by far a bigger impact on our kids. Hmm. And it's a constant churn.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for calling in. That's Julie Vassilatos. She's in Chicago. She runs a blog called Chicago Public Schools, and you can find her writing at yourcallradio.org. We have just about a minute left, but Carol, what about that, what Julie just said? In the Washington Post, a piece points out that Donald Trump and Betsy DeVos's visions are part of a long-term effort to privatize public education, which has grown under both George W. Bush and Barack Obama's administrations.
Oh, I agree. I mean, the movement of privatization was interesting. When I was in California, I asked people, like, you know, how did this happen, this rapid expansion of charters, especially the learning centers and so many of the charters that I found to be terribly problematic. And what people said is it's sort of like the frog in the pot, right? You put the frog in the pot and the water kind of simmers and the frog is fine and doesn't realize that you're continually turning up the heat. That's what's been happening since George W. Bush, and it's been happening under the Obama administration. And whatever the motives are, whether they were good ones or bad ones, it's opened up the door to what you see today. Well, the threat of Betsy DeVos is that what she's going to do is she's going to take that heat and she is going to turn it all the way up. And this is a very dangerous time because one of two things will happen. Either the frog will finally get smart and hop out of the pot, or the frog's going to be cooked. And we will not have a public school system, which has been the pillar of our democracy, in a few years if we're not careful.
Carol Burris is Executive Director of the Network for Public Education, and Kate Nickel is Executive Director of Oakland Families for Quality Schools, a nonprofit created by local charter public school advocates. Carol and Kate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Becky Bond. She was a senior advisor to the Bernie Sanders campaign, and she is co-author of the book Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. What is the status of the Bernie Sanders movement, and how will that movement organize against Donald Trump? Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. And you can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.